For December the 14th, 2018, we talk about the Game Award trailer reveals, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, and we ask you which single-player game you have put the most time into. Welcome to Level 267. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismith.
And I'm Jala Prendes.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome. I'm going to give a warning here at the beginning, not because I'm just straight up in, I always want to talk about my cat mode, even though that probably seems to have some bearing. My cat is currently in heat because she was unable to be spayed at the time of adoption, so she may be making some noise. I will do my best to cut it out. Might not be able to accomplish that. So if you are listening on some speakers around a male cat who is not surgically altered, then they may want to fuck the speaker. That is, you take all of the assumption of risk on you.
If that happens, post it on YouTube.
It'll be adorable.
Oh,
get
no.
All the likes. No, that's one of the things, you know, like just I didn't anticipate or think about when I got an animal because, you know, the default is like, yeah, they're fixed. You do that for humane reasons. So there's not overpopulation, et cetera. And I'm ready to make sure she has food. There she goes. Yeah, I'm ready to make sure she has food. I'm ready to give her a place to sleep and to give her attention and play. I don't know what to do about her being in heat. There's nothing to do except to wait. As she screams like a human, I think that I described the sound. It is a Civil War amputation in progress, is what it sounds like. Yeah, so it's been a rough couple of days.
Just imagine if, you know, that was what humans thought was sexy.
I don't know. I'm not going to yuck anybody's yum. So that's what's going on here. Also, I'm excited about Duckstream. It's happening this weekend as you're listening to it. I'll be playing Call of Cthulhu Dark Corners of the Earth.
I really want to see that, but I've got so much crap going this weekend. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to come in for very long.
Well, if you're able to come in at all, I will enjoy that. But if you're not, I also understand. It's really busy.
Yeah. Well, it's like every single time Duckstream happens, I am literally every single time doing some kind of event, at least one, often more than one.
Yeah.
So,
Yep. Yeah. So, should be a good time. Duckfeed West is going off from Friday to Saturday, and then Duckfeed East is going from Saturday to Sunday. I'm going to have some help from Allison, Jeremy, and Ben in the morning on Sunday. So I sleep so I don't die or get sick on the air.
Please don't do those things.
No,
that's not
good. I don't want to. It's not going to be good. David, how are you?
Still very sick.
Oh, geez, man. I'm sorry. Thank you for coming on. I didn't realize.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, it's been frustrating because I'm not actually... now at the point where I'm mostly well, but still coughing a lot, which is making it hard to sleep.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
So it's like largely just, very, I don't know, frustrating, but I don't know. I'm surviving.
I guess that's all you can ask for.
Yep.
Good job. Yeah, so. Good job surviving.
Yeah, as you do.
Yeah. Oh, Jala, how are you?
Well, I've been doing, as usual, a bunch of different things. But the main thing that I did, which is of interest to anybody, is I went to go see a band called Metalachi, which is a heavy metal mariachi band. And basically, they mariachi-ize classic rock songs. So you've got, like... You know, Led Zeppelin, Kiss, Queen, Metallica, Slayer, but as a mariachi band. Mm. And, like, they actually do a pretty good job with a lot of the songs. And, it, like, their show is really entertaining. They all dress like super metal. It's real great, real good show for sure. They're based out of Los Angeles and they tour all over the place. So if you guys ever see Metalachi come to your area, you should go check them out. The tickets are inexpensive, but they are well worth watching.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. The real version makes more sense than what I thought it was. I thought that it was metal versions of mariachi songs.
No. And like they throw their own original songs in there too. They're not just a cover band, but you know, like they do a bunch of different types of things and it's really a lot of fun. And I did record a few random videos and put those up on my Instagram, which is cross-posted to all the places that I post things usually. So on the Twitter and the Facebook and the Instagram, you can see all those videos if you go find me at Jalachan. So that is a thing.
Nice.
That is the most entertaining thing that I have done in the last however long.
Yeah. The mariachi music is the best and only argument for the accordion. I think. Yeah, mariachi's great. Awesome.
Yeah.
What was your favorite? What was your favorite cover that they did? Like either really just in terms of inventiveness or unexpectedness, etc.
I wouldn't like, I don't know. Cause like they had inventive and interesting ways to do a large portion of the songs. And a lot of times they would slide from like beginning as like a really super mariachi style to, you know, something that sounds more like the actual song and then slip back into mariachi mode a little bit and things like that. And then they would even transition one song into another song, like, you know, with seamlessly to the point that you don't even recognize right at first that they're switching to a different song.
Until you hear
and
the
like,
hook.
I downloaded, you know, like I bought their albums digitally, but like, the albums are nowhere near like what the show is. The show is so much better than the albums, but so like, if you listen to the music and you like it, it's nowhere. Oh, I have apparently a pet also at my door. Hello, poodle.
This is a first.
Yes. Yeah. Like, so my parents' dog, who is a schnoodle, she has come to say hi and she's giving me a hug right now and aww, kissing me, giving me licks. And she's looking at the microphone. So, yeah, that doesn't normally happen, but she came out to say hello to me.
Oh,
so.
Well, and we can't get mad at that.
No, she's very cute. She doesn't make any meowing sounds, though, so you just don't. You basically hear the door and maybe her little toenails on the floor. But yeah. Anyway. So.
Oh.
Okay, bye, poodle. All right. Okay, that'll be the end of that. She usually only shows up like once a day.
Oh, when a dog wants to say hi.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. Anything else?
No. You can also see the poodle. Schnoodle. You can see her on my Instagram and everywhere else as well. So nice. Go check her out.
Yeah. So we're probably going to have a little bit shorter of a show. We're rocking at freestyle and also we're all kind of tied up in a bunch of stuff that has kept us from playing too many new things. But I've got Smash Brothers to talk about. I can talk about that.
Oh, God. Whoa. That's surprising.
I've only played like 2 hours of it. And yeah, sure. It's a Smash Brothers game. Ah, damn it. I didn't mean to say everything I had to say. There might be more later on. But we've got the usual kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. I'm going to get us started here with one that is kind of a little bit more topical, related to specifically the Game Awards. If Ben was here, we probably would spend a little bit more time talking about the actual winners. As it stands, all I have to say is that Spider-Man got robbed, but otherwise I have no investment.
So did Spider-Man win anything or?
No, it was nominated for a bunch. However, it's got beat out in most places by specifically God of War. Red Dead Redemption 2 and Monster Hunter World, all of which are fine games, but I like Spider-Man an awful lot. So that's the only horse that I had in that race. I about yeah, said the I only horse I like had in that fight.
God
but
of
that makes
War
no sense.
Should get some sort of negative credit for all the games that came before it. Like, it should start with a debt.
You just described the opposite of what actually happened, which is, oh, this isn't like the things that came before it. And so it was judged more positively because of that.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's more interesting to me, though, is the announcements that come out around the Game Awards. It's the last kind of big event of the year, and a bunch of studios came out and showed their trailers. Guys, the Outer Worlds. The Outer Worlds, guys. The Outer Worlds.
Yeah, so that looked interesting just from like screenshots, but I haven't gotten time to look into it. What's the deal? Mm-hmm.
So The Outer Worlds is the game that was revealed that I am most excited about. It is a game by Obsidian. It appears to be it is of a much higher production value than games that they have made recently. Stuff that has been in like the Tyranny, you know, RPG vibe. It appears to be like a space western first person shooter role playing game kind of thing. Every description, like if you're looking for a pithy description of it, says, oh, it's like New Vegas in space. Appears to have
I can support this.
Appear like even down to like you have this frontier place that is being vied over by a bunch of different factions, like, you know, corporate interests who are trying to develop it and kind of the outlaw rebels who are trying to fight against that, and et cetera, et cetera. So it looks like you're going to be taking a lot of sides. It appears a little bit Borderlands-y in terms of its visual design, a little bit of its sense of humor as well. Yeah, I mean, so could be either good or bad. Based on the trailer, though, like, it's neat. Like, I laughed. It was goofy. It struck roughly the tone that I would like to see out of like a Fallout 2 or New Vegas style thing. So yeah, this is the thing that I am the most jazzed about.
Yay. Huh.
Yeah, I mean, assuming they you know, managed to dodge just the asinineness that is a lot of the tone of sorry, that's probably excessively judgmental. Like, assuming they're able to dodge some of the stuff from Borderlands, that could be really, really epic. And I definitely, any sort of return to New Vegas style stuff, I would support.
Yeah, I only bring up Borderlands as a touchstone because it is like a hyper stylized, goofy wasteland sci-fi future vibe.
Okay.
Yeah. Looks neat. Some other stuff that they announced, it had leaked, but there's a new Far Cry expansion. So kind of along the lines of Blood Dragon or, Primal. They've got one that is post-apocalyptic. So when it rains, it pours. It's actually in an alternate future of Far Cry 5 where the cult was right, I guess, is the idea.
I feel like that's another game that I feel like starts with negative negative karma or whatever.
Yeah, after Far Cry 5 was like, yeah, we're just afraid to say anything here.
Yeah, it's tough because it's like the same reason I haven't bought the most recent Destiny expansion. It's like, well, the last game didn't give me my money's worth, so I already consider this game to effectively be like $15 to $20 more expensive than whatever you priced it as.
Yeah. I don't know. The only other new thing that I saw was Supergiant, so a developer of Bastion and Transistor. They've got a game in early access. Looks really neat. It's called Hades. It is a similar kind of isometric action style game, but it is kind of in a roguelike milieu with a more kind of ink and pen style, visual style. Yeah. Oh, also Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 is going to be on Switch and it's going to be tight. I'm just trying that on. I'm trying to bring that back. I remember that from the early 2000s. I just want to bring that word back. And yeah, there was a little bit about Dragon Age 4 that was just like a little flavor trailer, but I don't know. Gonna withhold judgment on that. It's just good to see that BioWare is not putting all their eggs in the Anthem basket.
Yeah.
Anthem is the one that's totally not Mass Effect.
It's the one that is totally not Mass Effect and or Destiny at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Two great things that can't make decent sequels together.
Oh. Did anybody else have things to say about any of the other reveals or the awards or things like that? Jala?
No.
No?
No.
David, how about you?
No. I don't know. Like, I feel like the award shows in games, I'm not sure I think actually mean anything.
Yeah.
But I do have to say, like, this is the first time in a long time that there's, you know, game previews that I'm excited for. So that's cool.
Yeah. In watching people talk about the event ahead of time or, you know, while it was happening, people fell firmly into two categories. Either I want to see the trailers, in which case they just kind of wait and then watch them when they're released on YouTube immediately afterwards, or they wanted to watch the train wreck of the actual presentation.
I feel like I tend to, with movies and pop culture and stuff, like, not be someone who's a super big advocate of, like, what would be, like, quote unquote, like, art house films or, you know, stuff like that. But at the same time, I feel like video games still, like, I feel like video game award shows don't work because there's this super split identity between, like, OMFG, Call of Duty, and on the one hand, and, like, I don't know what the current, like, walking simulator is on the other hand.
Yeah. I mean, there's some stuff that's kind of in the middle ground here that I feel most comfortable with. I would say Obsidian is not necessarily huge. I would say that Supergiant is a big name, but also has a certain amount of kind of cred. There's a middle class.
Yeah, totally.
There's a middle class here.
Yeah, I think it's more, though, like for example, it seems to me like, you know, granted, this is outside looking in, but, like, Spider-Man almost falls into that in that it's a game that, you know, my understanding was a great game, was, like, technically whatever, but, like, probably isn't really saying anything. So is that why it, you know what I mean? Like, it seems like it's a game that lost just because it doesn't fit into either narrative.
I don't have a reckon on why it didn't get a nod for anything, but I would say that neither God of War nor Red Dead Redemption 2, the kind of the clear winners, were saying much of anything, and neither of those necessarily fall into like a really brainless populist style of a game. Right.
Sure. But I'd say more like, particularly with Red Dead, it seems like it's just like a game that to a significant degree can get by on just being huge, kind of like Skyrim did.
Yeah.
I mean, not that it's not also good,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it does seem like it's a game that's very much just, we're going to give you as much gameplay as we can possibly force feed you.
Yeah. I don't know. I would give a lot more credence to the, not a lot. I would give marginally more credence to it if it was not an attempt to try and make a television spectacle, you know, just kind of like, hey, we're big boys too. We can have a TV show that has these awards.
Right. Yeah.
That's the thing that kind of is a bummer to me, is that it's just it is a cry for legitimacy that just really don't need. Games make a ton of money. They're, you know, it's fine. We're the nerds won. You can stop being upset. yeah. Jala, what the hell is Soulja Boy doing?
Well, the American rapper Soulja Boy is selling it basically an emulator as his own console. So
I've not heard his name since 2007.
Well, get this. He's apparently got a bunch of shit on there. I'll talk about that in a minute. But anyway, right now, he He currently has Soulja Game Console and Soulja Game Handheld that are both available on his website, soldierwatch.com. And he says that the console can play PlayStation, Neo Geo, PC, Sega. I don't know what the fuck console Sega is, because there's more than one
just
of those.
All the Sega.
Yeah.
Apparently all the Sega. Game Boy Advance and NES games, as well as Soulja games. And comes preloaded with 800 games. And they don't tell what games those are, but
it's all Tetris variants.
Yeah. And he also says that the handheld runs, get this, Switch, 3DS, Vita, Neo Geo, Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advance games, and will have 3,000 games built into the system. Again, with no listing of what is, you know, what is supposedly on there.
Yeah.
And the console, now get the prices on these. The console is currently $149.99, and the handheld is $99.99.
So is he actually selling these yet?
Yes, they're on there. You can buy them. He also has his own versions of the Apple Watch, the iPad, and the iPhone, headphones, and earpods. So I would recommend you just take a look at just what he's got on sale. Seriously.
Wow. Yeah.
Check it out. Like, I just put the link in there. Check it out. Like, that's the Soulja Watch. But if you look at the catalog, you can see all of the things that he's got on there.
Yeah.
For sale.
Wow.
How is this not illegal? Like,
it probably is.
Yeah.
Let just us like, put it that way.
Selling something that has, like, Raspberry Pi guts and a display is not necessarily illegal. If it's
actually.
What's that?
If you're selling something using open source software and hardware, what you're selling has to be open source.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it is definitely illegal and has case law to back up that they can enforce their license.
Oh, okay. So
well, not only that, but you know, Nintendo's been shirking after all the emulator sites anyway. So
yeah.
Like. You know, he's at least going to have a problem with Nintendo with all of that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Although I would argue, I mean, Greg, we live in a corporate dystopia, so I don't think you could actually get away with this. I would argue simply playing existing Nintendo games is probably legal.
there's probably
however, like, providing any sort of them or anything like that would definitely be super legal. Also, I feel like I kind of doubt there's decent emulators, particularly for something as new as the Switch.
Oh, maybe absolutely not.
Yeah, yeah. Like, all of that is just BS, and you can apparently buy it. So, like, I definitely don't want to, you know, have anything to do with it, but I want somebody else to buy one. Because I want to know what the hell the actual thing is, if it's actually delivered and all of that, you know.
The Soulja Watch is $20.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't even know. That's great.
I just think, like, if I was going to jail, this is not what I would want to go to jail for.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, it totally is $20.
Yeah. So what this is, most likely, he probably went on, like, AliExpress or Alibaba.
You still,
like,
right.
Like, especially with, like, the phone, which just appears to be a... just a rebranded what appears to be HomTom Android phone. He probably got it and then his people flash it with some kind of like backgrounds and stuff, and then he sells that. And that absolutely has to be the case with, like, if you look at the controller on the Soulja Game console, like, that is absolutely just a probably like $5 USB. Oh, $5. Come on, no. Dude, $2 USB gamepad. Yeah, this is totally just like a almost like an Ouya play.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah, so I'm not gonna shame somebody for being on their grind. It's fine, but
oh,
this is
dude, I will totally shame this person. Like that is a scam, and hopefully they are whatevered.
Yeah. So it would definitely be the ROM distribution, but who knows? Like, it could just be like, he could just be pumping it with a bunch of, you know, just weird little, you know, things that are not technically licensed in any kind of way. I'm more curious about these Soulja games, honestly.
I know, like, I want to know what a Soulja game would be.
The thing.
What's that?
Abject suffering is the thing.
It really is. But I don't know. I'm not going to spend $150 to get a console to play for that.
Yeah.
To be whatever, like, I feel like the ROMs actually bother me a lot less than the open source stuff, just because, like, Nintendo's made their money. They're like a super corporation. I don't, you know, feel bad for them. I do kind of resent, you know, stealing the work of, you know, tons and tons of volunteers.
Yeah, I have no idea like how open source it is. I don't know what emulator will be on it. Like, the hardware itself specifically is like super cheap, unlicensed Chinese stuff for sure. So like, this is, man, the last time I heard about Soulja Boy specifically with games, he made a bunch of nerds really, really angry by, like, there was a video of him playing Braid and talking about how it was a dumb game because it was just Mario, and people got so fucking angry about that. It was hilarious. Like, people telling Soulja Boy, stay in your lane, why are you talking about this genius game? It's like, I mean, it doesn't matter if popular music man is wrong about video games. But it's very, very funny that you're angry that he's wrong about video games.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh. Yeah, so it just, that caught my eye just because it was just so asinine. Uh-huh. And I was just like, okay, I just have to share this because it's real weird.
It is, so. It is incredibly funny.
Yeah.
Oh, man. David, what is going on in South Korea?
Yeah, so South Korea apparently has the Game Industry Promotion Act, which I guess was, you know, passed in, you know, has been a law for at least a little while now. I actually looked into it some, and apparently at least some of the things it deals with is, a government campaign against video game addiction. And then also, government, I don't know, I guess, sanctioned video game ratings a la Australia and Germany.
Right.
But they've now passed amendment to it, or like an addition to it, that basically makes boosting in video games illegal, where boosting is hiring someone to play on your account to, you know, level you up, or presumably, you know, get, you know, earn you in-game money or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the specific way it's defined in this is it outlaws what's referred to as a proxy game, and says it's an act that interferes with the normal operation of the game by arranging or providing the service to acquire the score or performance of the game in a way that's not improved by the game-related business operated.
Mm-hmm.
The fine, or the punishment is a fine up to equivalent of $18,000. And a 2-year suspended prison sentence.
Good God.
Which I don't understand how a, like, prison sentence that is always suspended is a prison sentence. Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Ugh.
I mean, not that, like, obviously, you know, prison would seem pretty crazy for this sort of thing. I'm not saying, like, it should be. I just, like, does that mean?
It just seems like weird governmental dick waving a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I suppose it could also be, like, you know, again, I don't know how, you know, South Korea is with this than here, but I know in America, like, having spent any time in prison is basically, like, you know, why don't you just be poor for the rest of your life and never get a job?
It makes you not, so not, I don't know not a full citizen.
Like, and, you've technically been in prison or something?
I have no understanding of the South Korean legal system.
Like, yeah, neither do I.
I can understand a little bit of where they're coming. Like, I mean, I cannot understand. let me clarify this. Not like, oh, this is a good and proper thing to do. Like, I understand the motivation for why they want to do this, which is competitive gaming is a huge industry for them. Not in a lol jokey kind of way, but in an economic reality kind of way. If there's anything that calls into question the legitimacy of that industry or brings any kind of crookedness to it, that has the potential to damage it. See also kind of steroids or any kind of corruption in American baseball and how, you know, terrible that has been for that here. So I can see them wanting to get out in front of this. I don't have enough understanding of the behaviors that they're trying to curb to understand how they could actually damage the money making potential of people who are invested in this.
Oh, I'd say, I mean, they definitely boosting can damage, and you know, all forms of farming can damage the actual gameplay for people who are playing, right, which presumably would translate eventually to, you know, hurting the bottom lines of the people that make the game.
Yeah. Well, so I recently read about another kind of thing, which is a behavior that developers are trying to crack down on, which is the idea that somebody who is really, really good at the game never wants to play or practice on their account because they will build up a stat base that says, oh, this is this person is really good. So what they will do is play on other people's accounts or on fake accounts so that when they actually go into competition with their actual account, they say, oh, this is an up and comer, never been seen. There's no reason they should be expected to be this good. They're a phenom, etc. Mm-hmm. Which, like, it sounds like that's the opposite of what they're trying to outlaw here.
Yeah, it almost seems like, you know, spying and collecting data on all your customers is sometimes a bad idea.
Wait, so you're saying that there are incentives that are created that are perverse?
Yeah, you know, it almost seems that way. You know, it's amazing, you know, up and coming, you know, effect of the market.
Mm. Well, I say we let the people with all the money do whatever they want.
The grind.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
I ask, what single-player game have you spent the most time with?
Yes, this is a good question, especially, I'm feeling it because I just spend a lot of time with Baldur's Gate. I feel like I've been playing it forever, but it is nowhere near the most I have played a single-player game. I'll get us started here with Jack, who says, I have put somewhere between 500 and 600 hours into Morrowind over the years, and I still laugh every time I'm called a fetcher or sawit by a Dunmer who's about to get a sword in the noggin.
It's a good answer.
Translate?
Because...
What is a fetcher or sawit?
I don't know what they translate to literally, but you know, the dark elves in Morrowind really like insulting you.
Yeah, yep. as they do apparently.
Yeah, and if you're a Dunmer who's even if you play as a Dunmer character, you are not specifically from Morrowind, so you are still worthy of derision.
Yep.
Yeah. And Jolly, you said here that Jack stole your answer. Do you want to add to that?
Well, I actually have another answer I could give as well, but like I've talked about many times before how I would stay up in the middle of the night playing Morrowind when I was in college, and it was to the point that, like, you know, my laptop would overheat because I would play for so long. Mm-hmm. Or like a couple of times I just didn't sleep. I went to college, then I went to work, and then I came home and I was playing Morrowind, and then I just literally did not go to sleep. I was just playing the game until it was time to get up again. So, like, yeah, I was really, really into Morrowind for sure.
You were
playing. That was not the only game that I played a whole hell of a lot of, but I'll talk about my other answer since I had to get another answer later on.
You were playing Morrowind like it was an MMO.
Yeah.
David.
Back when I thought that an Elder Scrolls MMO is what I wanted. No, it's not. I found that out.
Oh. Apparently it's good now, though.
That's what they say about every MMO that's been out for like a year. They say, oh, it's good now.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been enough to get me back, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see here. David, what does Ollie say?
I have max characters in all four Souls games, but in the World of Soccer 97/98 edition for the PC, I've played maybe 10,000 hours. Malcolm Gladwell would be proud.
I think that means that Pele has to be your butler.
Yeah, I think that's how that works.
Yeah. I do not doubt you. I'd be curious how you arrive at the 10,000 hours. That is ridiculous.
So
playing a lot since it first came out.
Yeah.
So do you have any idea where does World of Soccer map in that? Like, I know FIFA is a thing and Soccer Manager is a thing. Like, is this like the indie soccer game, or like where does this map in the World of Soccer games?
It is a very popular soccer game that I thought it was Konami, but that's something different. Konami soccer games like Project Soccer, Kick'em, 97, the black and white edition. You buy the black edition, you get certain teams. You buy the white edition, you get other teams. They pioneered the Pokemon model. No, it's just a real popular PC franchise. So like real technical, as my understanding of it.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe you, Ollie. That is ridiculous. let's see, Jella, what does David say?
David says, if you include expansions as lumped together with the main game, probably either Baldur's Gate 2 or Neverwinter Nights 2. I've beaten both fully at least 4 or 5 times. I'm a real CRPG junkie.
Wow. Having been through Baldur's Gate 2, yeah, that is ridiculous. Sorry, I'm saying ridiculous too much. A ridiculous moratorium is in place now. But, you know, over somebody's lifetime, I could see playing Baldur's Gate 2 4 times. There's enough to do. Yeah. Sam Bear writes, there was a period of 6 months or so back in 2013 where I played Dark Souls over and over, and that has the highest playtime count on Steam. However, I beat Diablo 3 on every difficulty in its incredibly weird first version, and then proceeded to get every character class to the level cap multiple times in the good post-expansion version of the game. Diablo 3 is great if you have clinical depression. Dungeon Train is a good episode of Adventure Time about playing Diablo when you're depressed.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's actually like a really good treatment of that. It is a novel concept for a kid's cartoon to go after.
I have to check that out. My equivalent was definitely Warframe. So
Yeah, no, and I just play old RPGs. RPGs, man, get them numbers up.
Yep.
let's see, David, what does James say?
Well, it also has multiplayer. I've sunk in 1,500 plus hours into Diablo 2 single player since it came out, and when I was 7.
Oh,
and
wow.
No, ludicrous gibbs and demon boobies are not appropriate activities for a 7-year-old.
Wow. I can't imagine having the patience for Diablo. There are too many numbers. Too many numbers for my 7-year-old brain. Yeah. Huh. But I mean, that's probably why you played it, was the ludicrous jibs and the demon boobs. Makes sense to me anyway. Jolly, what does Mike say?
Mike says, on my Steam account, I have 715 hours logged on Dark Souls, followed by 420 hours, nice, on Dark Souls 2. Thinking about it, though, I bet I've probably put at least 1,000 hours into Final Fantasy VII over the years, 200 of which trying to make those chocobos fuck.
Oh, they fuck. You just can't get them to have good kids.
As you do.
Yeah.
I have to say, 420 hours.
Well, you just have to never play Dark Souls 2 again.
At least 420 appropriate game, or I mean rather Dark Souls, I can possibly think of.
Yeah. But, you know, it might be a little bit like, you know, people who are drunk tend to survive car crashes because they go limp. Yeah, it may stop you from freaking out and overcorrecting.
I just know last time I tried to play a game while I was Fallout 4, and I got lost in a building that literally had one room.
Fantastic. Yeah. I can't remember the last game I played while high enough to feel it specifically, to feel it especially. I really just go to sleep. It's hard for me to do stuff.
I don't get high, so I have no stories.
Oh. Be fair, at the time I lived in California, and I'm pretty sure they kick you out if you don't.
Yeah. They need to make sure you're not a cop.
but it's legal here now. Still have to make sure.
Oh man, that was you, Jolly, who read Mike's?
Yes.
Yes. So I'll read Patrick's, saying, I have 459 hours in Fallout New Vegas according to Steam. Most of it is probably testing which mods work best together, then finally doing a run when I get them working. My second most played game is probably Ultima 7, but I don't have an easy hour counter on that like Steam does. Though now I do think I'm due for another playthrough of that game soon. Yeah. Go for it.
It never ends.
Yeah.
Do the thing.
Old favorite games are good friends. Go back, see them every once in a while. Yeah. Let's see, David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, this is a hard one. I'll go for what comes right to mind and say Fallout New Vegas, which I clocked in over 200 hours.
You're almost at 10,000. And just keep on working, Greg. Sorry, Ollie has taken the cake.
Yeah, I feel like New Vegas, though, is a game that I feel like really rewards this sort of thing, just if in the very least in terms of, you know, the ending sequence of, like, and now to, tie up literally every loose end.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also all the expansions and stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Let's see here. That was, I'm sorry. I assure you I'm not high.
You were dealing with a very horny cat though.
Yes. Yeah. I was listening to her yowl out a window over there. So we're up to Lindsay, and this is you, Jala.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's do that. Jala, what's Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, I have over 1,000 hours in each Souls game and around 2,000 hours in Borderlands 2 and counting.
I feel like Lindsay's skirting the rules of this a little bit because both of those are technically, like, they can be multiplayer.
Yeah.
We'll allow it.
I'd be interested to see, like, what sort of shenanigans one can get up into Borderlands 2. After 2,000 hours, because I think part of my problem is I wasn't actually any good at it. Whereas I feel like after that much time, you can probably do some awesome stuff.
I also feel like at higher difficulty levels, you get like weirder randomizations too. So being on that loot grind probably incentivizes it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Let's see. David, what does Roop say?
Roop says, I think Gabriel Knight, Sins of the Father, as I've probably played it through at least once a year since 2004.
Yeah. Ritual games, I like it. Alexander says, it's got to be something I played in my teenage years. I'm going to guess Diablo 1 holds my highest number of hours, but I am very old and have no idea exactly how much time that cost me. We didn't measure that shit in the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Alexander saying Dark Ages reminds me of Dark Ages of Camelot, a game I never played, but I did play EverQuest. And when I found out there was a slash played category, and I found out that my playtime was measured in days instead of hours, which is not really a huge thing in MMOs, that really freaked me out. when I was still playing that in high school. I don't know why I freaked out about having so much time in something when I had all that time.
A dude in my class in college that basically stopped gaming after his freshman year when he did a slash played in World of Warcraft and realized that he had literally spent almost a third of the previous year in real time hours playing.
Oh God. So a full time job, more than a full time job, because more on weekends probably.
Ugh. Yeah.
Let's see here. Jala, what does Dan say?
Dan says Fallout 3. I know it's thought to be a weak entry in the series, but it was my first and I really loved it. I knew the entire map and DLCs like the back of my hand. I know Gary isn't a fan, but hey, this isn't WoW, so I should be safe.
Yeah, you're safe.
You were never safe from Gary. He appears where he is needed.
Yeah, I also wasn't. I'm not too crazy about it now. I remember being, you know, okay, fine into it at the time.
This is going to sound dumb. I really want to go back and just mess around with, like, the city that was overtaken by fire-breathing ants or whatever.
That's a good question.
Just because I got far enough, like, I literally, like, got to where you find someone there and you're like, what's going on? They tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, never got back to playing again. And that's a premise I am definitely on board for.
Yeah,
I don't know if it ended up awesome, but it sounds awesome.
It's a good quest. It's just, it is difficult. It is very difficult for being right next to Megaton is the problem. The fire-breathing ants will fuck you up.
Ah.
Yeah.
Sort of like going north in New Vegas.
A little bit, yeah. Let's see here. Austin says, follow New Vegas. I have 500 hours in that game, and I now want to do another run. Do it. If there's anything you should take away from this, it is just do it. Go play. You're fine.
Yeah. Oh. I have to say, like, again, kind of following off on all of them, I do think of the games I've, you know, wanted to do a quote-unquote run of, probably my number one is I at least once want to see if I can ever play New Vegas and go directly from the starting point north to Vegas.
Oh, you can do it. You have to get lucky. It'll take a lot of reloading to get past the Cazadores, but you'll be fine.
Yes, Cazadores. Damn it.
Jala, what does Robert say?
Robert says, it's been something of a tradition of mine to play Snatcher around Christmas, every Christmas since 1994. I find something new almost every time. For all its faults and unsavory Kojima-isms, what a staggering amount of world building.
And not all of it taken from Blade Runner. No, Snatcher's great. I like Snatcher quite a bit.
So what was our ruling on taking title suggestions from multiplayer? Can I nominate unsavory Kojima-isms?
Yeah, write it down.
Sweet.
Yeah. I have no idea if that goes against our ruling, but
it does not because we have had other titles that were literally just lifted from multiplayer.
Yes. Yeah. Let's see, David, what does Jonathan say? I've thrown the order out the window. I'm just picking at random here, riding wild.
So would you say you've defenestrated the order?
Yes.
Okay. Jonathan says, I don't have the numbers on them, but it would be either Daggerfall or Heroes of Might and Magic 3. They were the first time I played a game like them and were absolutely enamored with them.
Yeah. Heroes of Might and Magic 3, it's huge. It has like 7 expansions. Brandon writes, Resident Evil 4 probably. Probably 7 or 8 playthroughs over 4 or 5 platforms. Forgive my poor math. I'm not real bright, seeing as how I'll buy that fucking game every time it comes out. Note, I'm not smart for doing this. Cole is very smart and kind man if he does the same thing. is it out on Switch? I would like to have it on Switch. I've gotten RE4 for I think pretty much every console except for GameCube. I never had a GameCube copy of it because I never had a GameCube. Yeah, no, it's fine. Like the different versions, they pretty much leveled out, but the different versions seem to add enough, or, you know, do something, do enough different, or they did for a while.
Do any of them add the ability to strafe?
No, maybe there's a mod on the PC version, but the game isn't made for that, is the thing.
Oh, really?
Right. It's paced so that you stop and swivel. Yeah. Jala, what does Devin say?
Devin says, the first Command and Conquer Red Alert. I still replay it from time to time.
Yeah.
By the way, I think he was the first person to reply. Facebook fucked up the order of when these are out again.
What?
Yeah, like, God, look at that.
Had one job, Facebook.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They're just kind of reading whenever, so we better read everybody. Come on.
Yeah, okay. They shifted it. The bastards. For years and years, they did, you know, just chronologically, and then just, like, they switch it to most relevant. Fuck this. Man. Okay. I'll take us in. Command and Conquer is a series that I have that is a huge blind spot for me, except for Generals, which I played quite a bit. Let's see. Here's Alexander, who has a pretty lengthy response that I might skim over just a little bit. The hundreds of hours I spent in Caves of Cud started the first time I read the patch notes. I was hooked. When you wear the severed face of your enemy, you get an ego bonus based on the enemy's level and a negative 500 reputation penalty with each of the enemy's factions. That's pretty good. Caves of Cud is a classic roguelike, I believe. That's like in the vein. Okay. In the vein of like a NetHack or something. When pundits talk about emergent gameplay, this is what I think of. Here's a slice of your typical run of Caves of Cud. And there is there is something here that begins with a killer tadpole tore off my face and feet and ends with and have my legs amputated to have a set of treads installed.
But in order to get to where he could have the treads, he had to hook a gyrocopter to his back because, you know, didn't have feet.
Very good. Yeah. Good stuff, Caves of Cud. Jala, what does Michael say?
Michael says, when Last Guardian came out in 2016, I was all in. I had been waiting for the game since E3 2009 PS3 trailer. When that first weekend off came, I played the game till I finished. I remembered starting Friday, taking breaks to eat, and then Monday morning, 5 a.m., finishing the journey and tearing up to the ending. Or tearing up at the ending. I'm glad they took their time on PS4. I felt like I was in an artist's painting playing that game.
Oh, so this is not like longest overall time spent in a game. This is longest sesh.
Yeah, that's
which
what it looks
I
like.
I actually kind of like that.
Which, cool. That I actually kind of like that, too.
Yeah.
So, cool. There's an idea for a later multiplayer, if I remember.
David.
But if we do it, then Michael has to answer the other version.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. And David.
Yeah, that's good.
David, round us out with Nathan.
Nathan says, Age of Empires 2. Not strictly single player, but never played multi.
Still counts. Yeah.
Yep.
God damn it, Facebook. Why did you do that? I can't believe you've done this. Thank you, everybody, for responding. We should do ours. Mine is either probably The Witcher 3, maybe, if we're looking at just a single playthrough. And if it's multiple playthroughs, it would probably have to be something like Final Fantasy Tactics or maybe Dark Souls 2. Dark Souls 2 being kind of the longest of those Souls-likes. And also kind of having the most different versions that were put out.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I would say for me, probably Pokemon or maybe Dragon Warrior Monsters. The first one maybe technically, but the second one was more in the game I played kind of in the spirit of this. Although I feel like for me, it's kind of a bad question because the games that I've truly like just kind of, you know, deep dove in and just played a ton of or have all been multiplayer, most notably Diablo 2 and Warframe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I did the single player version. I wanted, because I figured, okay, if I put like any game ever, it's all going to be MMOs and multiplayer games a large portion of the people that are going to reply. So, you know, there are lots of people who like to play on their own, but there are also lots and lots of people who end up playing in MMOs and multiplayer. So,
yeah, Eric Plaisance mm-hmm. comes in like a wrecking ball on his playtime on Team Fortress 2. Which has rolled over into alphanumerics.
So, oh, wow.
No, it hasn't actually done that, but he's put a lot of time into that game. Mm-hmm. Jala, how about you? What was your next answer?
Well, okay, you introduced this whole thing about, like, well, how long did it take you to finish a game, like, you know, for one playthrough of a game, and that wasn't what I was thinking when I wrote the question. However, if we're going to answer that, it'd probably be Persona 4 Golden, because, or, you know, that stupid game, which, you know, like, I was playing that for almost 100 hours, and that's just, like, ridiculous, so... I guess like Morrowind or Skyrim would also count because I never finished those games. So I guess that also counts for a single playthrough. Yeah. But now if I'm just picking another non-Morrowind game, I would probably say Shining Force 3 because that game spans 3 discs and has like a bonus disc. It is a strategy RPG that I played many, many times. So... you know, being as long as it is and everything, I think that might be the next contender after Morrowind for a single player game.
Yeah. Nice. Good question, Jala. Thank you for putting it up. Yeah. If you want to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for them to go up on Monday afternoons. And thanks to everybody who chimed in. Good stuff here.
Yeah.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past week or so. I believe all of us were here last time, so I'm going to take the privilege of going first because I have something new that I at least dipped my toe into. I'm sure a lot of people have broken this game over their knee like they were Bane, but I got Super Smash Brothers Ultimate on launch day, and it has been a fun little diversion to play on portable. I did not play the Super Smash Brothers Wii U or 3DS, so I've not really had an experience or access to Smash Brothers on a portable. But wow, that is a really sensible way to play a game that is paced, you know, around these kind of short matches. And they have absolutely paced their single player campaign in such a way that it is meant to be bite-sized, you know, for a portable experience. Yeah, it's neat. It's Smash Brothers. All the stuff is there. You can go to all the places.
Yay!
Nice. Yeah. So what is the... I'm just curious. What is the thing with I keep hearing about, like, I don't know, supporting characters and like spirits and things like that. Like, what's all this deal?
It's really interesting because it's incredibly fiddly. I feel like it's probably just about the right amount of fiddliness. So the idea is that you kind of set up a party when you're playing this in single player. I have no idea what this means if you're playing multiplayer, like if the spirits transfer over. As you play through the single player World of Light kind of campaign, what you unlock are spirits, which are these kind of like attributes that you can assign to a particular, you know, that you can assign to your character. So an example would be, and these are all pulled from their own particular games, like you can get a spirit that is Snake Man for Mega Man 3 specifically. And it improves a certain attribute. So it's like, when you have Snake Man equipped on this character, your damage that you do by throwing an item is increased. And as you play, you get kind of items and points that you can put in to level up these, you know, to level up these spirits, and you can swap them around. So they they serve a couple of purposes. One, it is Nintendo nostalgia or video game nostalgia, which is primarily why I play Smash Brothers. And two, it's like a pretty intricate equipment system that modifies either the starting condition for your character in a match, or confers some kind of permanent bonus or specialization to your character as you go in. And as you walk around this map and go and fight individual characters, you know, with their own little spirits, it brings a tremendous amount of variety to what you are encountering. So far, the single player campaign is not like Subspace Emissary. It is not like a platformer that they're trying to shoehorn, that they're not taking Smash Brothers and trying to shoehorn a platformer into it. It is just a way for you to select your paths and engage in these little customized fights, unlock the spirits for yourself, and then also unlock the new combatants, that you can play with.
Okay.
Yeah. Did I over explain that, or was
No, that's really interesting. So does the single player, like last one I really played was Melee.
Mm-hmm.
But does the single player have enough meat to like support this sort of thing?
There's no story that I can tell. It opens with a big cutscene that you have seen a million times in memes, probably. And I guess the idea is that like some cosmic force is using the Master Hands to erase every Smash Brothers combatant from the universe, etc. And all that is left is Kirby, and he sets about to go and free all of his friends from this. From this horrible fate. Really, the single player though is just a like a grid of progression to get these spirits and to unlock the characters. So I think it's good for them not to try and like make a Final Fantasy scenario that you have to play through like they did in Subspace Emissary. Subspace Emissary, like I it was fine. I don't know that I would have the patience for it today. And sure. It's good because I don't have to. I can just have this neat little progression of different, you know, of different variants on fights.
Sure.
Yay.
That's pretty cool.
I'm a little bit annoyed that we're at this. Somehow in 2018, we are still in a version of reality where you have to unlock the characters that you play as in a Smash Brothers kind of game, especially after they had done such a good job with, say, Mario Kart, where everything was unlocked from the get. I don't like the idea of needing to put in a bunch of time to play as characters that I'm really curious about. Like I, you know, since I never played the Wii U version, I never had to play as Bayonetta or Cloud. And sure as shit, I'm not made of stone. I really want to play as Bayonetta and Cloud because nostalgia is real and my feelings are real and you cannot laugh at me, damn it.
And also boobies.
Well, you know, with Bayonetta, it's more of an ass thing. Yeah. But, you know, whatever. The game is fun enough that I'm invested in the unlock path, but it just seems a little bit strange that, like, people get this and then have to put in a bunch of time to actually play as the character they want to play as.
Do you know, is that also true of like, most other, say, more mainstream fighting games, you know, Street Fighters and Tekkens and stuff like that?
I have no idea. Jolly, you've played a Street Fighter game more recently than I have.
What about it?
Do they have all the characters unlocked from the start?
Or I think you have to, like, buy DLC to get them crap.
Yeah.
Which is, like, worse.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that, well, there are going to be DLC characters in this, and there have been in the past, but no, I don't want them to do that.
No, I'm not a fan of that.
No. Any questions? Any more questions about Super Smash Bros. Ultimate?
No. Smash, it happened.
Yeah. The other thing that I've tried playing, and it is one of the first games that I've just kind of like straight up noped out of for a Hexcrank stream, is a game called A Room Beyond. This is so it is definitely a European developed independent game. It is styled after, or you know, tries to make you think that it is going to be something like an Alone in the Dark kind of deal. It's made in Unity, but it has this hyper pixelated kind of filter put over top of it to make it look super lo-fi. You wake up kind of in this cage. There's been this eldritch ritual that was done on you, and you step out and you're in the countryside and some terrible things have gone wrong. There are spiders everywhere. It is not a good game. I was incredibly bored by what I played. Didn't see a lot of hope that it was going to get better. And decided, nope, I'm just not going to finish this, which is a rarity on these streams. It plays like a regular point-and-click game, which is a bummer, because if you're going to pretend that it's going to be like Alone in the Dark or make it look like Alone in the Dark, let me control it like that. But I'm a masochist who likes tank controls. Additionally, even though it does play out like a point-and-click adventure game, there is combat, which is super bad. And
oh,
so
great.
Yeah, you just have to maneuver your character close to enemies and then whack at them and hope that they don't hit you back. There's no way to move, there's no way to block, you know, until they die. So
were there crate puzzles?
No crate puzzles. They not yet. There was a puzzle where I had to cut a rope so a crate would fall from the ceiling, but I didn't see it. Didn't move me closer to my goal. I think it was just a neat thing they decided to let me do.
Okay.
Yeah. So Room Beyond, I was excited about it, but I gambled and lost.
You were excited until you weren't.
Yes, I was excited until I played it and realized, no, this is not fun.
Yay.
Any questions about Room Beyond?
No, I'm glad I missed it because I was at a concert.
Oh, yeah.
I was having more fun than you were.
Yep. Oh, man, for sure. Oh, well, at least the chat commiserated. That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jala, Danganronpa 2 report.
Okay, so I finished Chapter 2 and I started Chapter 3. And I set the game down when I got to the third island and I saw Titty Typhoon.
What?
Titty Typhoon. I posted it in the level chat. A screenshot of the Titty Typhoon. That it, like, you literally go to the third island, and the first thing that you see is this sign on this island. This says Titty Typhoon. It's, and I'm like,
I forgot about that.
I'm done for tonight. Like good night.
it is the name of like a club / like concert venue. I have no recollection of Titty Typhoon. It is not it is not necessarily given weight in the narrative.
Oh, no, I'm sure it's absolutely fine, but I was just like, I'm done. This is the place that I stop playing for now. So yeah, I played Chapter 2. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it was that I was supposed to have seen that was supposed to make me overjoyed about playing the game. Mm. I do not particularly have anything that I feel at all about it. I have gone from, you know, violently upset to apathy, and what the problem with the apathy, now yes, that is a little bit closer towards liking the game, but if I stay apathetic for too long, you know what happens. I set the game down and I don't play it again.
Yeah.
So that's what the potential is at this point. Like, I have a higher chance of playing Corpse Party Blood Drive again because that game made me so mad than I do picking up a game that I have no feelings about at all. So, yeah, we will see what happens from here. So, again, like, I don't know what it was I was supposed to have seen in the second chapter that was supposed to make me excited.
We may end up, I may end up cutting away from this if it's too spoilery. But I'm unclear about which case you just finished.
Okay, so the case that I just finished was related to the swimming suit stuff.
Okay.
I'm trying to be kind of vague so you get an idea of what happened. Where there was during the trial, there was somebody else that was had a repercussion that was not supposed to have been punished.
Okay. I'm just going to cut away from this and Dave. Yeah. So now I know which case Jala has finished. The thing that case does what it begins to introduce is the idea of something that happens in this game, which is like what technically is like counts as a murder. Which is neat. That was the wrinkle that kind of intrigued me more into it. But I don't know if that was enough for you. I was pretty invested at that point. David, go ahead.
There was also another listener who is a particular fan of the game, and that would be Jared. And Jared was like, what I liked about that second chapter was basically in the second chapter, Monokuma, the evil bear thing, mm-hmm. that is the evil overlord of the entire thing and, like, you know, causing the whole killing game. Monokuma gives the kids that are playing this killing game a motive by way of a video game within the video game that you have to go through or whatever, except it's not actually a video game. You just like watch what seems to be a shitty video game from like the PS1 era. You know, you watch some things happen and then like all you do is like you move the character and open a door maybe, and that's about it. And basically what happens in that game is supposedly mirroring, some events that happened in the past that the characters don't remember. Mm-hmm. And so there was an ending prize that basically, solidified the motive part of it, like why it would trigger somebody. You know, and want them, you know, like cause somebody to kill somebody else.
Yeah.
And all of that. And so that is the part that Jared really liked, was the fact that it was like a game within a game, you know, a mystery, you know, layered in, like with a double narrative kind of thing going.
Yeah.
So that didn't particularly interest me because, like, I wish that instead of adding more fucking mini games to the trial, I wish they would have just actually made that an actual game that you had to go through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, even if it was a very short game, if they had made it like an actual game instead of just like, yeah, you're quote unquote playing a game.
Yeah.
Okay,
To give further background on that, that is like a callback to a previous series that Spike had done. Spike Chunsoft being the developer of Danganronpa, Twilight Syndrome. Actually, some of the first games that Suda51 were worked on. So the idea of putting those in was supposed to be like a huge kind of nod to the fans. I remember liking the idea of putting clues within the game within the game. However, the game within the game itself was kind of tedious to play because
it was tedious and it wasn't all that interestingly presented.
Yeah.
So it wasn't overall, nearly as compelling as I might have hoped. Like if it had turned into some kind of like completely different type of game, like I would have been like, oh dude, if this is like a survival horror game, I'm gonna be down for this shit or something, but like no, it was and like, you know, they wouldn't have put that into this type of a game, but they could have done something and worked out something to make it more, you know, more compelling and more interesting to play rather than just, boy, what's this shitty thing that I have to do now and suffer through with some worse graphics than the graphics that were already less good than the first game that I'm already having to suffer through.
What they did was they said, okay, we've got this text heavy kind of visual novel adventure game. We need to put a game within this. What can we do? Why don't we put in another text heavy kind of adventure game, except it's super archaic because it's a callback to games from 20 years before.
Yeah. So I was just like, that doesn't really get me on board with all that. Mm. So like that didn't hit a good note. Like I appreciated the fact that they were trying to put a game within the game and mm-hmm. add some kind of layering to it. I appreciated the complexity that they were trying to, you know, that they did achieve, for the trial this time around, it wasn't, you know, as bleedingly obvious. I did not like that they added more mini games to the trial.
Yeah.
That had nothing like this. What's this surfboard like Sonic, you know, get the rings, the Chaos Emerald from like what Sonic 2 or whatever it was with the tunnels and shit. What is that? What does that have to do with anything? Like, you know, like I liked it better when it was more pertinent to the actual actions of a trial, you know, than what they were doing with some of these other mini games that they put in there. It just kind of feels like, you know, a war of attrition, you know, like just to get through, to get on with the rest of my, you know, rest of the game, the rest of the story, if I'm gonna, you know, like it or whichever. So I don't know, but we will see how it goes from here. If the trials continue to be complex and at least, you know, like somewhat more interesting, like if they're building up to more and more complexity, then that might keep my interest level. But it all just kind of depends upon how it goes from here. Like I said, I just kind of like, I settled on, like, I suppose saying too that the end of the second trial is supposed to be this like gut-wrenching, tear-jerker kind of, you know, thing. And it even involves one of the characters that I actually like.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it done before again. Yeah. Like it's like another one of those instances of, I know the tropes well enough that it doesn't have any impact on me, you know, like
I can't answer to that. Yeah,
I know. And like, if I hadn't seen that done several times before, then maybe it would like be more gut wrenching. But also, you only really had the opportunity to spend time with one of those characters that is involved.
Yeah.
So you don't really build up a closeness to one of the involved parties. So like, that's, you know, that
involved party that they're trying to make you feel a lot about, her entire thing is necessarily alienating because of her characterization. So the little time that you spend with her is not going to necessarily be high value time.
Yeah. So, and it's just, and then too, like the big reveal about that and about her personality, that I don't like that character type either.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, please die now. Please get off my screen. I would like that.
Yeah.
So we can move on in advance and maybe. Yeah. So yeah, like that's why I kind of like ended on an apathetic note with that. Mm-hmm. Like I don't hate it, but I don't feel like super excited either. So we'll see how chapter 3 goes, and hopefully chapter 3 is a little bit more interesting and you know, piques my interest a tad so that I can, you know, continue to get through this. So
we'll see. before I talk obliquely about what you are going to face down in chapter 3 and beyond, let's all say it together. Let's all do the disclaimer. In no way does Cole say Jala should play this game through to the end.
I wanted to put in some time and see how it was and see if it was improving on everything, because everybody kept on telling me I needed to play it. Everybody but Cole, because Cole knows better. You know, like I'm trying to give it, you know, like an even chance, like a fair chance and everything. And by the way, I was happy to find out that many of the listeners who have listened to the last week's episode, when I got so mad I was banging my metal teacup into my desk, they said that I actually did have a very fair treatment and they understand where I am coming from. I was very logical and whatnot. So I wasn't too much. So that's good news. I tried to be like, you know, even if I was worked up, I tried to be fair about my assessment. So yes.
Yeah.
So do tell me about chapter 3, at least a little bit obliquely. Yeah.
So chapter 2 is kind of the last chapter without a gimmick that is necessarily kind of like intriguing about the nature of what's happening. Okay. I need to be very oblique about this. Mm-hmm. You're going to get into chapter 3 and the stakes are going to be raised very high in regards to the motives that are introduced. Mm-hmm. And that's going to segue into chapter 4, which is probably my favorite case in the entire series. That is not me saying like, oh, you just need to play until well beyond the halfway point of this game to see it. Yeah. What I'm saying is chapter 2 is the last one that feels like, oh yeah, this feels like a Danganronpa trial or like, a Danganronpa situation or scenario.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, it's starting to introduce a few things that I can see having potential. Mm-hmm. What they do with that potential is kind of like, I'm not hopeful because I played the first game and I got hopeful about the first game only to have those hopes dashed.
It's very funny to hear you talk about this game in terms of hope.
Yes, I know. That's why I did it. So anyway. We will see what happens and whether Nagito wins. Okay. But anyway.
Oh,
I have to make a comment about the voice actress, voice actor and voice actress that I like. So the character that I liked who died, who I'm convinced will come back, that character is voiced by Akira Ishida, who is a voice actor who played Zelos from Slayers, who is like a trickster type character who is mm-hmm. really cool. He also played Alex from Lunar, the original Lunar game, the Japanese version. And so he's played many, many other roles, but those two roles in particular are two roles that I really like. And he is the person who voices the first character that I was really interested in this game.
Oh,
and
weird.
My dilemma with Nagito is that Nagito's voice actress is Megumi Ogata, who I love her voice. She plays lots and lots of Bishonen, like pretty boy characters from different anime, video games, all different kinds of stuff. And like, I I'm a sucker for a good voice. I love her voice so much mm-hmm. and how she speaks and everything. But she plays in this game a character that I can't fucking stand. And it's a very, very terrible place to be in where it's like, I want to hear your voice. I do not want to hear your words.
Yeah.
So,
I didn't know that you were playing with the Japanese VO.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Oh yes. If I have the choice, I'm never going to pick English.
Okay. Yeah. I just said
because I didn't
want to walk into a subs not dubs debate. I didn't know that I was talking about characterization.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I studied Japanese for a good length of time, and so I understand some of the nuances of Japanese better than what the translations in English are, you know, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. Like, there are nuances to the Japanese, you know, speech that do not translate to English easily. Mm-hmm. And for me, it is better to hear the Japanese and get those nuances of character directly from the voice acting.
For sure.
So that is why I picked the Japanese.
Yeah.
So
I understand that.
Yeah.
That also it changes the tenor of I think understanding which characters are going to jump out, because I have no concept of what their presentations are like in Japanese. Yeah. I just know their English voiceovers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Have you played anything else besides DR2?
Nope, I've been busy.
Yeah. David, how about you?
So I actually had, continued to do on some Fortnite, although I feel like there's basically nothing to say about that. However, probably more interesting is I picked up GTA 5.
Oh, yeah.
So, I feel like I'm probably playing it wrong because I really only care about the multiplayer, or at least bought it for the multiplayer. I don't know. It's, so far it's interesting. It seems like there's definitely something there, although I don't think I've ever seen, or at least not in recent memory, a game that tried quite so hard to have you not play it.
So are you speaking of, so have you touched the single player at all?
You're required to play the tutorial mission.
Okay.
Which is, I think, is it Michael, one of the characters?
Hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah. Michael. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's basically him doing like a bank heist gone wrong. And so that is the sum total of the single player I've played.
Okay. And so you spent your time in multiplayer. How do they make it difficult to play? I have no experience with this.
A combination of just like things not being explained hardly at all. It very much just like after a fairly short tutorial, just kind of dropping you in to it, and almost explicitly just saying like, "Hey, you figure it out."
Okay.
Similarly, the options are very, very not intuitive. Most notably, like it's not at all easy to turn off voice chat, and you definitely want to turn off voice chat. The other issue I would say is that I personally feel they dramatically overestimate how fun the core gameplay is, in that, it's basically, what would GTA be like if there wasn't any story, which is kind of meh.
Right. What's
And
the
then
like what's the structure of the multi of the multiplayer like? Does it put you into a persistent kind of world, or is there matchmaking that you're doing?
so it's kind of a combination. So there's, the general world is pretty much a persistent world, and that then there ranges from, there's kind of some sort of, smaller sub events you can do. And then there's also, again, like multiplayer events. So it'll be things where basically, the game's equivalent of guilds, which are crews, can set up missions for you. And it'll often be things like, one of their players will be, set as a VIP, and so then you get lots of money if you kill them, or things like that. And then there's also, just periodically some sort of built-in mission. So it'll be things where, like, say it's, for the next 3 minutes, there's a competition of like who can get the highest top speed in a land vehicle, or steal the most cars, successfully land a parachute at the lowest altitude, things like that. And so that's kind of fun, although the problem is that they throw everyone in together, and even on top of the normal problems that these sorts of games have with like high level players, killing off low level characters, it's even more exaggerated due to how over the top the unlock system is. So like I've had times where it's like me with a pistol and a crappy like muscle car getting taken out by someone literally in a flying motorcycle with a rocket launcher on the front.
Is that a hacking situation or?
No, that is actually something they've added.
Okay.
So I should say, why I say flying, it's jump jet, so it is like temporarily hover flying, but still literally like out of nowhere, a motorcycle can streak onto the screen and blow you up.
Okay, first off, awesome. Second off, and like I guess my reaction to that would be to like laugh and respawn and see what else, see what else is going to come. Like that doesn't seem like a downside. That seems like a, well, it's funny that that can happen in this. Let's see what
Yeah,
comes up next.
I think more of it, though, and maybe this is kind of the core of my core complaint with this, is there's not enough other stuff. Okay. Like, you know, that would be fun if I was doing something like, you know, moderately interesting, you know, like an interesting mission, and then like, but all of a sudden zany stuff happened.
Yeah.
You know, like when I'm playing, for example, you know, when you're playing, when I was playing Shadow of War, and it's like, oh yeah, I was, you know, playing this, you know, kind of fun mission, but what really made it cool is all of a sudden this orc that, you know, speaks entirely in rhyme ambushed me. Like, there it's interesting because it's making something that you want to do, you know, kind of more crazy. Whereas here it's more just like you are in effect doing chores and get rocket launchered. So, similarly with the actual match-made missions, I feel like they very much excessively exaggerate the driving to and from the missions, which I don't know. I don't think GTA's driving model is that great.
So kind of two questions that are related. Why is it that you're opting to play the multiplayer, to play solely multiplayer, and how was Grand Theft Auto Online kind of like sold to you that made you hop in and say, fuck yeah?
So I feel like in terms of like avoiding the single player, I don't know. I really find the humor of Grand Theft Auto kind of unlikable.
Okay.
It just strikes me as like we're going to be cynical about everything just because.
Okay.
And I'm a little bit interested to see, because like I do think the Grand Theft Auto games probably the only video games I can think of that I'd consider to be legitimate satire.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is a lot of stuff where they're kind of being cynical and making fun of things is, you know, legitimately satire and like actually makes interesting points. I think the problem is that they apply that kind of mode to literally everything.
Okay, but like what is it about the play of Grand Theft Auto, if the style doesn't work for you, that going into kind of like contextless pure system made you think, yeah, I'm gonna be all about this? It sounds like I'm like harshly interrogating you. I don't mean to do that. I just want to understand.
Yeah, no, totally. So I think, you know, what I was looking for was just kind of like having, you know, just having fun shenanigans, you know, heists and, you know, shootouts and, you know, chases and stuff like that. I think the problem would be, one that, without any sort of context, there's no actual structure to like have anything happen, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's kind of like in order to, you know, have like a mission to, I don't know, raid a crack house or whatever, I at least need to have a character that in some, you know, semi-comical way tells me to go raid a crack house.
Yeah.
And then I think also, in terms of like what didn't work is just, I think the time to kill is really messed up. In which I was trying to think, I think it's a combination of maybe headshots being overemphasized and the regeneration, health regeneration being much too slow. So it's a thing where it will be like, you know, you'll take, say, like, a few just incidental shots, and then a fairly significant time later, you know, take one headshot and just immediately be dead because you didn't regenerate.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, just doesn't work.
Yeah. At what point do you install or reinstall Payday 2 and just play that?
You know, I'll have to see. You know, I'm probably going to eventually give the single player, you know, a shot, especially since it seems like maybe, I don't know, I can't think quite what gave this impression, but it seems like to a certain degree, some of the things I've seen suggest that some of the storyline in itself, you know, sort of deconstructs kind of the crime narrative type thing. And so it seems like, you know, if GTA can satirize itself, maybe that would actually, you know, wrap around to being good. Does that make sense?
I mean, so to that notion, I think that that is absolutely the aim, especially with the inclusion of Trevor, who's kind of the off the rails kind of, you know, the guy who lives just kind of out in the hinterlands and is completely deranged. You could say that is the aim for it. I think that how successful that will be to you is determined by, do you think that doing something ironically does not necessarily count because you are still doing the thing, encapsulated by the fantastic Onion headline, ironic porn purchase leads to unironic orgasm, which is it still subverting Grand Theft Auto stuff if you're doing and reveling in a bunch of Grand Theft Auto stuff? Because like the thing that it does amazingly is show you realistically and satisfyingly what happens when three very terrible people who are terrible for different reasons get mixed up with each other and interact in a way that is completely predictable.
Right. And I guess maybe some of it was kind of the, you know, actually having reasons for being terrible, which is something that it seemed like I didn't necessarily get that vibe from previous things.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, just, I don't know. I'd be interested to hear, and, you know, I'll probably look up, you know, kind of other people's things, because I think just the big thing for me is just the overall cynicism is just really off-putting for me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I really read it as, like, it almost comes across as, like, you know, we can't be happy, therefore we're going to make fun of anyone who's happy. And like, not that obviously, like, you know, I don't know, I'm not saying like that's like what the game developers themselves are like as people or something like that, but it's more, I feel like that's the tone that gets achieved.
Yeah. My problem with it is that it's all incredibly surface level. Like just in the way that like, haha, Americans sure do love fast food, don't they? Like, yeah. It feels like a, like 101 level pot shots that somebody from that somebody from Northern England would like level against the, you know, the American pop culture. Not so much like it being reflective of any kind of like philosophical bent.
Right. It also strikes me as, I'm trying to think, this came out in 2016, right?
Grand Theft Auto 5 came out in 2013.
2013, yeah. Okay, so that's even worse. So I feel like there's also a certain degree to which it, you know, seems a little bit poorly timed, just because I feel like if you think about, like, you know, overall, like, how is society seeing, like, police brutality and, like, you know, firearm violence and stuff like that? Like, all of those things have dramatically, well, not really changed, but have changed from, like, a public consciousness standpoint since when this game was written, to a point where, like, it almost seems like it would be impossible for the game to... Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The context that it exists in doesn't necessarily doesn't necessarily seem like it would be one where people would look at this and say, oh, that's cool.
Right.
Yeah. Just the context has shifted.
Yeah. And it's also, and this is going to be just a random thing, but it still disappoints me that kind of these crime games or like, Fallout 4, stuff like that. I don't mean this at all, especially with what I just said in like some sort of like, you know, NRA slogan type of thing, but just like, you know, the vast majority of the weapons and stuff like that you use in the game, like, have never been legal for public ownership in games. And I'm not so much, you know, like I said, mean that from an NRA thing, but I just mean just in terms of like, I think it'd be a lot more interesting if you made a, you know, shooter game where every gun wasn't either the M16 or the AK. You know what I mean?
Nah, but people who play video games expect there's a progression. It's like in cartoons how you go mouse, cat, dog. In games you got to go pistol, shotgun, machine gun. That's more of a problem just with games than with anyone gonna take on a portrayal of gun culture.
Yeah, I'm not even saying so much gun culture so much as just like for example, I really liked Fistful of Dollars, simply because like playing with, you know, Western weapons where like every weapon in the game takes forever to reload and is slow to fire, like, was a you know, first person shooter experience I hadn't had before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more like, I think it would just actually make for more interesting gameplay if you weren't using the exact same thing.
Yeah. So similar to like how World War II games played different until they just decided to make World War II a skin.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, you know, I'll have to see, like, there are good things. Like, I really appreciate, you know, the degree to which they've supported it. You know, the fact that, although they do a lot of, you know, maybe kind of not cool stuff with the whole, like, hey, buy in-game money, at the very least, I appreciate that, like, all, like, what, like, 5 or 6 of the expansions for it have been completely free.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's good or bad. Well, I'll have to see how it ends up.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's honestly about it.
Cool. Well, that sounds like an episode to me. How do you all feel about bundling it up?
I feel button.
But credit. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We really appreciate it. I'm going to eschew all kind of admin style stuff, except for our personal plugs, just to say go to duckfeed.tv/duckstream or all the usual channels to watch our charity stream to support the Transactive Gender Center, and dig deep if you can. We'll be happy to have you there. Pop in the chat and root us on, etc. It's a good time. Fifth annual. I can't believe it. Cool. Is there anything else big that I'm forgetting?
I think not.
I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I continue to be David Meismith on the wards of the internet.
And I'm Jalachan in places.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, I didn't capture any, so Jala?
I have one.
Okay.
Whatever'd. David said that thing.
Cool.
So, okay, so I had a couple, but let me switch to my list.
Okay.
So I had popular music man is wrong about video games. Or maybe... I feel like you could maybe popular music man is wrong about games, or just popular music man is wrong.
I like popular music, man. It's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A ridiculous moratorium.
Okay.
And unsavory Kojima-isms.
Okay.
I kind of like popular music man is wrong.
I like that too. Just because the Soldier Boy story was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I like that. I like putting that at the center.
Cool. Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go. I've got to, I haven't heard Greta for a while, so I need to make sure she has not escaped, or pulled down a bookcase on top of herself or something.
Yeah. Okay. Go do that thing. I'm going to eat.
All right. Feel better, David.
Yes, feel better.
Thank you.
Eat and get rested, Jala.
Yeah, I need to sleep. That would be nice.
All right, take care.
Good night.